All right, good afternoon, everybody. This is Kevin Moore. I am substituting for Kevin Shortell, who is en route from his home to the three-day training event that we're going to be having this weekend up in Newark, New Jersey. Hope everybody's having a great day. And if you're in the path of the whatever the latest version of our hurricanes are, watch out for flying coconuts and flooding. So what we want to do today, we've got a lot of things to cover. What we're going to do first is we're just going to do a quick review. This is an update regarding the expedited foreclosure law in Ohio. This is something that I had done a brief intro to back in July, and as of October 1st, it is now in effect. So what Ohio did is they went and they got serious and said, okay, we're going to go ahead and expedite the foreclosure process for vacant properties. And it went into effect at the end of September, and we'll go ahead and get you some more updated information and get that on the website. But in a nutshell, what they've decided to do, instead of it taking 2, 3, 4 years to foreclose on a vacant property in Ohio, they're now going to go ahead and put a process in place where their goal is to be able to speed them up and get them done in as little as 180 days. And also, one of the things they put in the law, which I love, is they put in a little, what we call a clawback provision, where if the homeowner damages the house before they vacate the premises, they can actually be held criminally liable for that. So that should cut down on some of the, what we call the pack and go, where people, a lot of times when they leave their foreclosed property, they'll pack up the sink, the water heater, the furnace, et cetera, and take it with them. So that is one of the things that Ohio put in their law, so I'm pretty excited about that. So we'll get some updates to you, but just remember that's now a tool that you've got in your arsenal, where with the Ohio properties, they are working aggressively to make the foreclosure process easier and are kind of listening to what the lenders have been screaming about for about 5 years now. So, and I know first up we have a follow-up with Anthony, and this is on an existing asset. I believe this is on Notes Direct, isn't it, sir?
It is, yes. Let me pull up the details here and find Anthony. Okay, there's the question. Do you want me to read it?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, and Anthony, you are unmuted. Okay, so this is an offer. Do you have this under contract, Anthony?
I actually do. The PSA was signed on the 3rd, and I did receive some information today that it's ready to close. My IRA is just waiting for instructions to wire the funds. But I have some concerns about it, so I really want to talk it through.
Sure, why don't you go ahead and talk it through.
Okay, and since it's a follow-up, I'll try and give you the backstory from when I first saw it and the due diligence that I did as far as looking at the property value, since it was a non-performing and it had been vacated for a couple of years. My exit strategy was either to get a deed in lieu or go through a foreclosure. What I found in looking at it was that it was a land contract, and I got in touch with an attorney in Kentucky, in Danville, which is just outside of Junction City, and he indicated since it was a land contract, you didn't really need to do a foreclosure. It would just be a forfeiture of the contract, and whoever owns the note can just reassign it to somebody else. So I did my due diligence. I visited with the city of Junction City about some maintenance liens, which I am fine with the delinquent taxes, which I'm fine with. But after signing the PSA, my 10-day due diligence on the 3rd, I received a call from the buyer's attorney informing me that he was thinking about countersuing on the foreclosure that was started by two previous assigners of the note. And I just got off the phone with the attorney that I had down there who did find the foreclosure case, and it's really kind of a mess. So I'm not sure what Kevin knows about from a legal standpoint, or if there's somebody else that I need to visit with, you know, maybe offline about this.
Okay, and so Anthony, thank you for putting up good, clean detail, and your narrative was excellent. So let me go ahead and give you kind of my take on this. And as always, we're not giving you legal advice, et cetera, et cetera. But
right.
from what you're sharing with me, your attorney seems to be pretty well versed in land contract law, which is very, very nice. The fact that he brought up the option of the forfeiture versus the foreclosure.
Right.
Means you're headed in the right direction. And so everybody that's on the call, with a land contract, typically the first course of action is you're going to go for a forfeiture, because that's a very, very fast way to go. Yeah, it's very inexpensive for you as the note holder, and it also gets you back to the property in a much faster fashion. If forfeiture isn't appropriate, what they'll do is they'll go ahead and do a foreclosure and then follow the state and local guidelines for how the foreclosure would be initiated down there. And this is in Kentucky, you said, correct? Right outside
correct.
Of Danville. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Bluegrass State. All right. So now let me make sure I've got all my facts straight here too. So the Rock Top had initially filed the foreclosure, but we don't know the date of the filing.
No, I don't think that we do. I think it was in November of 2015.
Okay.
The note was initiated by somebody previous to Rock Top.
Okay.
Harbor Portfolio essentially sold the property to the borrower. And the borrower, as I looked at the payment history, after about the second payment, the borrower was late almost every payment after that for about a year and 2 months or so, and I think he walked away from the property at that point.
Oh.
I think Harbor then sold it to Rock Top, who initiated the foreclosure, which I'm confused about why they would do that since it was a land contract, but that kind of opened this whole Pandora's box of people, including the IRS, who supposedly has a $75,000 lien against the property.
Okay. So let's go ahead and kind of just go with the foreclosure issue here, and then it says borrower has an extension to reply. So what
right.
do you mean by that? Have they responded to the complaint?
The borrower's attorney, who called me, indicated that they had not responded to it because they were considering filing a countersuit against the note owner for what they consider false inducement, meaning that in the land contract they were told once they paid it off they would have a deed clean, a clean title to the property. And with this lien from the IRS, it would not be a clean title. So it has become a mess.
So my first question is, how did the borrower's attorney get your name and number?
Actually, in doing my due diligence, whether it was right or wrong, I found the previous borrower and reached out to see if he would walk away from the property with the deed in lieu. That was before I talked to the attorney there. I had left a message, and the borrower actually called me, told me who he was, and that he just wanted out of the property. But then his attorney called me a couple of days later and said, you know, what's your intention with this? You know, are you aware that there's an IRS lien, that it's in foreclosure? Things that I wasn't aware of that were not in any of the due diligence that I had done. So all of that was done, has been found out in the last 2 days.
Okay. All right. So let's go ahead and I'm going to help you kind of walk through these questions and we'll go ahead and answer these things. So in terms of reaching out to borrowers, unless you're the owner of the note, we're always going to tell you that you need to follow all applicable laws and rules. And since you're not the note owner, you don't own the debt, we're always going to tell you to not do that. So in this case, what you've done is you have found out that there was an IRS lien from a previous owner. And what I'm going to tell you is that probably is not that big of an issue.
Okay.
Because the IRS debt is going to stick with the borrower, and yes, the house was at one point an asset that the borrower owned. So that's just a form that would have to be filed with the IRS. So that is not going to be that tough of an issue to clear up.
And I remembered that from some of our classes that the IRS part was, I believed, was a relatively minor thing as long as it wasn't $1 million property and a $100,000 lien, then they would obviously want their money. But
and Anthony, I'm trying to remember. I remember you putting this on the call. I know we had a picture up of the property and everything else. What's the value of the property?
The BPO, the original one done back in May of 15, was about $27,000.
Okay.
I had another one done because I was serious about the property, and it has come in higher than that by another $10,000 or $12,000.
Okay. But the reason I asked that question is with the IRS, with this form, the strategy always is you're basically just going, listen, here there is no equity, et cetera, so then the IRS will release its lien.
Right.
It's a nice, cute-looking little house, but I think everybody on this call would agree that it's not something that's worth $150,000, $200,000, $300,000. So, all right. So right. The IRS lien, that's some paperwork that just needs to be cleaned up. Okay. And then, sir, if you can take me back to the question page again, please, for Anthony. All right. So, in terms of the attorney talking to you, and they're saying they're going to countersue somebody. That's just somebody. And again, this isn't a legal opinion. I'm just giving you an opinion based on my experience in this business for 20 plus years. I'll speak as if I was Eddie. They're yanking your chain.
Okay.
What we'll do also is I'll go ahead and after the call I'll reach out to the office and we'll make sure that we get some attention here for you. Okay.
Okay.
So with the questions in section B where it says wouldn't Rock Top have to disclose this foreclosure? Typically what will happen is if there's a foreclosure filed, that it will be in the report. And remember, in most cases, when a foreclosure is started, it can stay with the asset. And what I mean by that is if I had a non-performing note that I initiated a foreclosure on and then I wanted to sell it to you, Anthony, in effect, that foreclosure can come with the property. And when you buy the note, you basically take my place in the foreclosure process, okay? So again, that's just a matter of we got to figure out exactly where that is in the process and get that back on track, okay? So that's always something to have in kind of in your toolbox, just to remember that you want to check for the foreclosure action and then make sure that is addressed. And then the IRS lien, when we looked at the title work. Let's see, who did the title search on this one?
Pro Title.
Okay, so Pro Title. Okay, let's see. Pro Title report.
Do you want to see the title report?
Sure.
Okay.
That was one of the files I sent you.
Yep, okay. I have it here.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so Rock Top Harbor, okay. Warranty deed, okay. Grantor, okay. Go ahead, keep scrolling up. Keep scrolling. Okay, lien. All right, so notice of Liz Pendens. So, let's see. Notice Liz Pendens tax lien, maintenance. Okay. Wow. So the city of Junction City was going to go ahead and they were going to try to take the property for $27.35, huh? They don't mess around down there. They don't have Andy Griffith for the Mayberry RFD sheriff down there, evidently.
Oh, pretty hardcore.
That is hardcore. All right. So here's what we know. So the notice of Liz Pendens was filed by Rock Top in September of 2015. Just because they filed the Liz Pendens, they may not have gone any farther than that. What that does is that's just given a notice to everybody that,
right,
that the lender has a claim on some debt that is attached to the property. So that kind of gives us our clock. So we know right there that that is from September of last year, so about a year ago. So that's how we can build our timeline up. Everything else looks fairly simple. Go ahead and scroll down, please, Sarah Smore. Okay, Rock Top. Okay. All right. So that's all that was found on this, huh?
Yeah. All of the ones. There's 27 pages, and
right,
really they're just images of the maintenance liens and some of the delinquent taxes.
Sure.
But all in all, the city of Junction City only is in it for about taxes and maintenance liens, about $2,300, which is not an issue.
Okay. Yeah, no, I would agree with you. Okay. And then, sir, if you could go back out to Notes Direct, and let's just see if there's anything else in the file.
Sure.
And so also what I want you to look at here is there's a very important document that we want to go ahead and always remember. And in this case, it says special warranty deed. So the reason that I want you to always remember the difference between warranty deed and quitclaim deed is that if you see the words warranty, it means that they are standing behind it. So in this case, this is a special warranty deed from Harbor to Rock Top, and so that is much different than a quitclaim deed, where a quitclaim deed is just saying I am quitting my interest on the property, real or implied. So okay, so this was conveyed with a warranty deed. All right, so that's nice and clean. All right, go back at that, and that's all we have in here. Let's see, land contract, assignment.
What would be the other special warranty deed that's unrecorded, I'm assuming?
I do not know.
It's the same thing?
Yeah, it looks like the same thing, just without the recorded stamp on it.
Okay. Just the original.
Actually, keep going. Is that Rock Top to Colonial Impact?
Oh, that could be. Yes, it is.
Okay. And actually, we can go down. Let's see. Okay, so let's scroll down. I just wanted to make sure we're not missing any recording.
Okay. Yeah, there's a different day on it. Yeah, there is.
All right.
The other one was November 2014.
Okay, scroll down. Okay, I see. All right, notary. Exhibit. Okay. All right.
Okay.
All right. Okay. So again, with this, Anthony, I'll tell you this. I don't see anything in here that's really too scary. And I know that the clock is ticking, where you're going, hey, I'm a little concerned about the due diligence. What I'm going to do is when we're done with the call today, I'll just go ahead and get with the office, and we make sure we reach out to you and we'll get this thing taken care of. So all in all, you know, when you're looking at non-performing deals, there's always going to be some scratch and dent stuff. This is a nice clean asset, this also was a great learning, example, and you actually may we might want to go ahead and put this in the case study competition, because because this is one of those situations where it's for to anybody who's ever, you know, who's a parent or who has ever babysat or anything, where, you know, kid comes screaming into the front door of the house covered in blood and you're like, oh my God, you know. It turns out
in their forehead.
Yeah. You know, or it turns out it was his friend's blood, or, you know, or one of the mean parents, you know, had some leftover Halloween blood and thought it'd be funny to scare the crap out of you instead of them for a change. So again, this is a situation where, you know, when the kid comes running through the door screaming covered in blood, everybody panics, and with this, you've done a nice job in terms of just logically putting it in order. So yeah, I don't see anything in here that's going to be critical.
It has been a learning experience for me, time on the phone and actually getting to know the people there in Junction City, some of the maintenance people, and even the gal who I called about the liens. You know, she said, well, I'll have to talk to the mayor about that. And I said, well, I need to talk to whoever I need to about the taxes as well. There's some delinquent. Well, that's me as well. Yeah. I said, okay, well, and when we were all done, she said, you know, I drive by this property every day. You know, I hope somebody will finally get it and start taking care of it. And
sure.
She said, when you do, call me, because I know somebody who wants to buy it.
Perfect.
And so, Anthony, I'm glad that you brought that up, because again, this is where we can teach you with the classes, we can work with you on the mentoring calls, we can give you all the curriculum. What you're doing is you're showing that, you know what, by picking the phone up and getting some experience and learning how the business really gets done, that's going to be valuable for you on your next buy. And then also, more importantly, there's a lot of times people will shy away from assets that are, you know, in little towns, or they're rural, or they go, you know, hey, they had to go 25 miles to get a comparable sale. What this does is this kind of shows you the power of a small town, where, you know, you're talking to the lady who's the decision maker, and she's going, hey, I drive by this property all the time, and I know somebody. Yeah, that's perfect. So, yeah, you're networking. You're having your own virtual meetup group at the same time.
I love it.
Perfect. All right. So what do you want to do with this asset? You want to foreclose on it, and then what was your exit strategy, Anthony?
Yeah, I can scroll down here.
Yeah, my exit strategy with this one, based on what I have figured out so far, as long as we can work through the foreclosure issue and I can get what I would consider a clean title to the property, then I have talked to a realtor who went out and did another BPO for me, who works with rentals. Her family owns a few in the area, and she has a contractor who she's going to get some bids for me. She thinks it probably about $8,000 or so to get it up to where it would be rentable, and she figures it could rent for about $650 a month, and then I would get some, season it a little bit, and look for an investor.
Okay. All right.
I might even just leave it in my IRA for the cash flow.
Well, being able to use tax advantage investing is a wonderful, wonderful thing, and something like this certainly would be nice to keep within an IRA. So.
Yeah. I've been watching also the 50-50 or the turnkey flipping training, and this could be a perfect one for that, if I could, you know, get 50% down and write it on a note, get my money out of it, and start over again.
Okay. So, all right. Well, then, as I said, if we get this put all together, this might be a fun one to enter in the note competition. Because, again, it's one where everybody sees all the scary terminology and everything else, and you can show that here's what I did. I followed the roadmap and got it resolved, and it was a nice, clean, successful deal. So, okay, again, I appreciate you being so detailed on this, and as soon as the call's over, I'll make sure that we get on this for you and give you a hand. We'll get you through this one. Okay?
Yeah, I would appreciate a call offline. So thanks, Kevin.
Yes, you got it. Thanks, Anthony.
Kevin, quick question on the Ohio foreclosure that you mentioned at the top of the call. It says, in Ohio, is a forfeiture the same as a termination of contract?
I'm sorry, could you say that one more time, please?
Yep. In Ohio, is a forfeiture the same as termination of contract?
I would have to go back and just double-check the specific verbiage in Ohio, but typically what you're going to do is motion for forfeiture and or a termination. So, and again, what Ohio uses for terminology may vary a little bit from Kentucky, may vary from Missouri, but typically whenever you see termination forfeiture, they're typically, in my experience, that they're synonymous. But I would just double check that just to make sure. Okay.
All right. So next up we have Charlie, and let me just get him unmuted here. And Charlie, you're unmuted.
Hello, hello.
Charlie, how you doing?
Doing great. How about yourself, Kevin?
I'm doing all right. The deal that won't go away, huh?
It's just an odd thing, you know. It's not
all right.
Straight up buying a note. It's from a bank, you know.
Sure. Okay. And so, Charlie, this is kind of a follow-up to the conversation that we had on a previous call, and I think Eddie and I were on that call, weren't we, when you did this one the first time?
I think we corresponded by email a little bit. We talked about some other things that I was doing on a previous call.
Okay, well, you could stop being so busy. I mean, come on. You're doing stuff.
It's one of those things that just kind of came up where a wholesaler that I've done business with before called me and says, I have this person that wants to get – that their house is being foreclosed on, and they want me to buy it and then owner finance it back to them.
Right.
And that's kind of how we ended up in this thing.
All right. So they want you to sell it back to somebody who hasn't been paying on it.
Yeah, that's what they're asking. Plus, they wanted an extra $10,000 to put some work in the house.
Okay.
Why not?
So using the reasonable versus unreasonable filter, would we think that's a reasonable or unreasonable request?
No, I don't think it's reasonable at all. But I've been kind of using it as a case study and about getting in and talking with an asset manager in a bank, and I have them willing to sell me the note.
Right. No, and for anybody who's on the call that isn't aware of this situation, Charlie, one of his sources did bring him a bank direct deal, and it's just that it's a very, very long story. The backstory is he did get the opportunity to look at a bank direct deal. Charlie's done a very, very nice job of walking through this process and getting to the right person. And what we know right now, and Charlie, correct me if I'm wrong, but what we know right now is it does look like the bank is fairly motivated. And the big question, the nutshell of this whole thing is it's scheduled to go to sale next week, right? Next Wednesday, I believe.
Next Wednesday.
Right. Okay. And it looks like, in theory, that somewhere in the neighborhood of $120,000 or less would get you this note.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, my one question is, I know going back and forth there was some different opinions on the valuation. What do you think this property is worth?
Well, after talking to the loss mitigation person at the bank, you know, I suggested that, you know, the house could, you know, possibly be worth between $300,000 and $400,000, and she was like, oh no. And I was like, less. She was like, I know less. She was like, I've been in the house. So she's been there with an appraiser twice in the past few years and said that it's rough inside. But again, you know, she was like, it's got a lot of potential though, you know, because it's in a great neighborhood and it's, you know, it's $300,000 to $400,000 houses around it, you know.
Well,
The borrower even told me that he's intentionally not done anything to the house at all because he doesn't know if he's going to be able to keep it. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, to me, that would make sense. Yeah. But we also know that buyers are liars. So, right. We always want to take everything with a grain of salt. And in terms of potential, you know. My mom's been hearing that about me since kindergarten, so you know, here we are.
Yeah.
Nice.
And that's a good thing. Look where we are. We're in the note business, damn it. All right. Yeah. So then let's read between the lines on this, because Charlie, I know that this deal it piqued your interest. You're also doing it because it's an opportunity to work one-on-one with the loss mitigation department, which in a lot of cases is a rarity. So this is a great opportunity, but if we read between the lines, we got to think that if you took this property back, you're gonna have a substantial amount of rehab potentially. Correct?
Yes. One of my questions was essentially is it's not for me to do the rehab. If I was able to buy the note before the foreclosure sale, could I not just let it still go to foreclosure sale next Wednesday and set my strike price $30,000 more than I bought the note for?
That is one strategy that you could look at. And then at the end of the day, you're gonna go ahead and have to deal with this borrower who is very, very savvy.
Yeah, they're playing the victims, but they're investors. I mean, they've bought and sold land and got land for, you know, sold lots, you know, development and that kind of stuff. So they're not idiots, you know.
Right.
And talking with the bank is that they've done this before. See, looking back at their history, you know, this thing was owner finance for 3 years, and then they got it refied, and then got City Mortgage to take it over, and then they got, you know, it looks like maybe a second on it or something along those lines, and then they got Home Trust to take it over, and I'm not sure that they've ever been current with any of these people, you know.
Okay.
And then they filed for bankruptcy 3 times with Home Trust trying to foreclose on it.
So what does that tell you about the nature of the borrower?
That you really don't want anything to do with them, in my opinion.
Right.
But I'm also a little bit worried about litigiousness, you know, if they, you know, I've talked with them directly one time, right, and gotten them to agree to give me written permission. I got their signatures, written permission, so that I could talk with the bank directly, you know. And then I go to the bank and talk directly, and, you know, then I go and just kick them out or foreclose on them. Then they're going to try to come back on me.
For what?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I just you know, if it's they're going to lose the house either way, any way around it, you know, because there's not anybody that's going to do what they want them to do, buy a, you know, a $200,000 house for $120,000 and sell it back to them for $120,000. That just wipes out their debt, you know.
Right. Right. And this wholesaler that you got this deal from, you know him, you trust him. He's a guy that he's not trying to give you a pig in the poke, right?
No, I've actually talked with the borrowers, and I've actually driven by the house because it's in, obviously, in my area. And I bought a wholesale deal, a rehab deal from him before, and so yeah, we talk regularly. So I trust him anyway. That he's of the same mind that these people are not really trustworthy at all, you know.
Okay. Well, at this point, where the rubber meets the road is, it's Thursday, and what you've got to do is you've got to put a number to this and then get it to the bank. So,
right. The bank said, you know, the loss mitigation person said, you know, look, you need to go look at this house. You need to go have it appraised, or you need to, you know, go in and look at it. And I was like, well, I don't even know these borrowers. You know, I've only talked to them once.
Sure.
She was like, well, go over there and ask them, and if they won't let you in, then there's your answer. She was like, you should just bid on this at the auction, is what she says.
Okay. So, well, and we'll get to that in a second. Now, this house is not currently on the MLS, right?
No, no.
Okay.
No.
Okay. So the bank was trying to, as part of their dispute resolution, was trying to go short sale, which means the house would either have to be listed or they would have to bring a buyer to the bank
at a specific. Right.
Okay.
So the borrowers asked if the bank would do a short sale, and they said, sure, bring me an offer, somebody with an offer.
Okay.
And so that's how they came to us, essentially.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. And it sounds to me like you've got a very, very friendly loss mitt person, which is a rarity.
She was very, very open with information. She was like, look, let me just tell you straight up what's going on here. And I was like, great. I would enjoy the information, you know. So she's almost like, she's like, don't pay too much for this.
Right.
You know, is what she keeps telling me. She's like, we just want to get out of the thing, you know, something out of it. But they owe $287,000 or something like that.
Well, I guess at this point, what I would be looking at is, if you come in and you give that, if you give the bank a number to buy the note, mm-hmm. and it's too low, what are they going to tell you?
They're going to say no and just let it go on to the foreclosure or to the auction.
Right. And if you went in and offered them a price that was too high, what would they say?
We'll take it, or we'll push the auction off.
Right, exactly. So if you go in too high, they're going to say yes. So,
yeah.
You know, Eddie is the sharpest negotiator I've ever met, and I like hanging around and listening to him just because he's so good at it. You don't even know he's negotiating, and so I know there's the one negotiating lesson on the website too. That's always fun to listen to. But with this, I guess what I would counsel you on is, at this point, I'd put a number in front of the bank. If you think this is the deal that fits for you, I would put a number in front of the bank that is a make sense number for you. And I also want you to add, I want you to make sure you sprinkle a lot of aggravation seasoning on this, because if you're going to have to battle with the borrower, they've been battling with everybody for 5 years.
At least, yeah.
And so they're not going to go, hey, yay, and pack up and leave. So,
right.
And I just, with this one, I always tell you, protect your capital, that this deal has the makings of a good deal, but you've got to get it set up in the beginning. And so if this lost mitt person is giving you advice going, you know, hey, make sure you know what you're doing, make sure you know what the offer is, and we just want to get something, I would go ahead and quantify what something means. Does that make sense?
Sure. Just get some sort of, I mean, get a low offer over to them just to see what their reaction is.
Yeah, what you're going to do is you're going to say, listen, I'll go ahead and I'll buy the note, and you know, I'll take your place in the foreclosure process, et cetera, et cetera. And North Carolina, there's a
right of redemption, 10-day right of redemption.
Okay. Yep. Okay. All right. And then after 10 days, you got to go to straight eviction then.
I think so. Often in our area, you know, the right of redemption it drags on for months because. Okay. There's so many bidders on foreclosures, you know, that they just bid it up. You know, you just have to just bid higher than the last guy, and it's just like a really long, extended, drawn-out bidding process.
Okay.
You know.
Okay. What I would do then too is just make sure reach out to your attorney, and just make sure you understand the timeline on the redemption period, and also just, you know, understand what the borrower can do on this, but again, if you're in a good area, I mean, you're down in that Asheville, North Carolina, you're in a very, very strong market. This is a property that, if you go in with your eyes open and you're assuming worst case on it, and it makes sense, I just go in with a super low number on this.
And does it make sense if we could purchase the note before before the auction sale next Wednesday that it would just we would just step into the place in that same auction?
Well, here's just because they have a sale scheduled doesn't mean the sale has to take place.
Right.
So what they may do, and this is very common, and I've worked in the in this space a long time. A lot of times, what will happen is the lender will just go ahead and they'll cancel the sale or they'll delay it. And you know I've done that myself before, where it's like, okay, hold on a second, just we'll pull it off and not run it through the sale, because to put it back on, it's not a big deal.
Sure.
Okay. So again, with this, I think you're kind of in a win-win in that if you go ahead and reach out to your Lost Met person, say, okay, here's my number. What they may do is go, okay, hold it. We'll just go ahead and we'll delay the foreclosure. We'll delay the sale anyway. The one question I did have, and I know you had responded via email when you had sent me all the paperwork on this earlier to take a look at. I didn't see the foreclosure filing. From the current lender.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I mean, where I could. Yeah, I didn't see that in the records, right?
Well, it's got. They've got it posted.
From the. Right, but I would. I guess that wouldn't be in the recorder's office. That would be somewhere else.
Typically it's at the county, it'll be at the county clerk, and you know, everybody's different. Some places they call it the county recorder, some places they call it the register of deeds, etc. One thing you might want to do is reach out to Pro Title, real quick and just say, hey, I got a question. I just want to verify that everything is correct on this. They should be able to find it for you.
Find the foreclosure.
Yeah, and they're reach out to I'm trying to remember, I think it's Melissa who's in the office at Pro Title. If not Dickie, and they're very, very fast. Just tell them, hey, listen, here's what I got going.
Gotcha. I in the Register of Deeds, you know, where they have the titles, the deeds, and all that kind of stuff for the house, there was nothing. I didn't see anything about a foreclosure. I did see a foreclosure on another property, of theirs, a trailer or something that they got foreclosed on, but I didn't see anything from Home Trust in there.
Okay. Well, what I would do is use that as a negotiating tool as well, which is, hey, you know, if I'm my offer is subject to me being able to go ahead and basically have you assign the foreclosure to me. Right. And that, typically in the states I work in, that's what we call it. They just assign it. But if you just tell them, hey, I'm going to go ahead and just take your, you know, so my attorney is going to need to talk to your attorney. Your offer, what I would do is just make sure that you can verify that the foreclosure is where they say it is and that it's been done correctly, et cetera, et cetera.
Gotcha.
So you're in the driver's seat on this thing. And, you know, worst case, If they can't get something done before Wednesday, you know, if you got time, run down there and see what happens.
Yeah, at the auction.
Yeah, because they can also at the auction, the bank can go ahead. They can set their strike, and if nobody bids that number, they're just going to take it back anyway.
Yeah, they're just going
to take it back anyway. Okay, and then I know. Let's see. Bill had put a comment on here. Thanks, Bill, about tell the borrowers that you will do nothing without seeing the inside of the house. You've got their permission, you've got the opportunity to make that work, try it. And again, remember, we're always going to caution you, because you don't own the note, you're not the lender, typically you can't get into the houses. This is a very, very rare occasion that you know, you've got the borrower talking to you, and you've got the Lost Met people talking to you, that may be a play. But again, this is the exception, not the rule. And my guess is they have more than one litter box in the house.
Well, they've got a lot of jet skis and bass boats in the front yard, you know.
All right. Well, then, now wait a second. Now this is where we get to the negotiating. you can't ever have too many bass boats.
That's right.
So they probably have extra money if they're not paying their mortgage.
Yeah. You might want to get an additional inducement to the contract, is what we call that, which is a nice Ranger bass boat with like a 275 Merc on it or something. All right.
You're creative.
All right, Charlie, keep us up to speed, and like I say, just you've done a great job managing this through. Just now, it's just going to be, all right, what's my number, and how do I protect myself?
Yeah, I need to. Unfortunately, I've got most of my money wrapped. I've got 6 or 7 notes, right? And most of my capital is wrapped up in those notes. So I'm going to have to find the money for this deal, you know? So.
Okay.
That adds an extra layer of complication to it, you know? I don't mean to drag this out, you know, on the call longer than I should, but.
That's okay. We wanted this is one word. Today. We wanted to focus on some due diligence and some follow-up issues, and so this is a good one to do it, and Anthony's was as well. So that's fine. Yep, that's fine. So okay. Well, good. I'm glad that you're working the deal through, and you're also going, you know what? Don't let me kill it just because I may not have the capital sitting on the kitchen table this afternoon.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
You always say that you get the deal and find the deal, and then the person will come along, or that you'll be able to find the.
There's always capital for good deals.
That's right.
That's just how it works.
Great.
It's like gravity. You don't have to understand it. You just know that it works.
I like it.
There you go. All right. Thanks, Charlie. All right.
Okay, Kevin, I don't know if you feel like there's enough time to dig into a notes direct asset, or if you just want to go to announcements.
I'll tell you what, we're just about 10 of 5. I don't want to be rushed on walking through an asset. What I can do is, if there's any other questions or anything, or any hands raised or anybody pinging you, we can cover that, and then I'll let you go ahead and run through all the announcements and everything else, and I think we'll slide through here right about 4:55.
All right. I will. I don't see any questions right now, so I'll start on announcements. But if you do have any questions, send them over. Obviously, the change in the mentoring call schedule happened this week, and if you're on the call, you remembered. So going forward, it's going to be the Wednesday-Thursday flip. Wednesday will be at noon, Thursday at 3. And Kevin Shortell normally runs this call, but he is a Florida resident and need to get to New Jersey today for a 3-day this weekend, so that's why Kevin Moore is on the call today. November offering on Notes Direct. Due to the Note Expo and Appreciation event, we are pushing it back a week because we don't want it to launch during Note Expo. So the Titaniums will be offered on Thursday, November 10th, and then the offering to the rest of the students will go out on the 15th.
Wonderful. All right.
Yeah. And then we have the case study competition. Do you want to highlight this at all?
I'm going to go. You sound almost like Vanna White as you're rolling through this here. So go ahead. We'll keep you going. You're on a roll.
All right. So case study competition. Get your case studies in. We haven't gotten as many submissions as we would like, and we've expanded the categories this year. So even if you don't think it's good enough or complete enough, just send it in. Kevin Shortell will handle that. If he doesn't think it's complete enough, he'll get back with you. When in doubt, send it in. Yes, that's all I have to say about that. Deadline is the 14th.
Right, so that is a week from tomorrow. And yeah. Sarah, to your point, what we're looking for is we're looking for deals that have got a story that resonate. So, for example, today we started with Anthony, and I said, you know what, this one could be a very, very good asset to put in the case study competition. I talked with Kevin Shortell yesterday. He's like, don't worry about filling out the paperwork and everything else. Just get me the asset and give me a quick write up, and then he'll reach out to you. He'll actually help you put this together. So, it's kind of like having your own private tutor when you got to get your book report finished. So. Again, people bring a lot of great scenarios to the calls. both with assets they've purchased from Colonial and from people that have purchased assets from other sources. And so I know they're out there. So in terms of quickest workout, best brokered deal, the most creative deal, you know, the paper out where, again, you see where people go, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to use seller financing as a tool, as one of my strategies. And I know there's people out there that they have what I call the serendipity deal, where you bought it with one intention in mind, and then all of a sudden something else just popped up and fell in your lap. So that's the stuff we're looking for good fun stuff, and it doesn't have to be completed. So if it's a situation where you go, all right, I got the deal to this point, and now I'm just waiting for the next step, which is, if it was a seller finance deal, you may be looking for an investor to buy a partial out of it or something like that. That's okay. That's okay. We can, Kevin will help you write the ending on that. So,
and I can tell you really quick about the one that I turned in. It was my first note purchase. It was non-performing. It was under $4,000, so it tells you a little bit of hair on it. I bought it because I bought it with my IRA because I thought this is my first one. It doesn't cost a lot of money. If I screw it up, I'm not out a ton of money. So, and the reason I was kind of proud of it was because it's the Trulia map is quite colorful and airs a lot more on the side of red than it does green. So,
gotcha.
You know, it's kind of against my better judgment to buy it, but I bought it, and as soon as I bought it, they started paying again. And they're paying sporadically, but I've still gotten back over a third of my money already on a deal that I took a total chance on. So,
right.
You know, it's not I didn't make a ton of money on it. It still may go south, but I submitted it. What the heck?
There you go. There you go.
There you go.
Appreciate that.
Okay, right. And fifth annual note expo, less than 30 days from today. And just one note, Titaniums, you have to register separately for the VIP reception the night before on Wednesday. And you should have gotten a separate email for that you can just click on to register, and it'll add it right to your calendar. Make sure you register for that separately. Hotel reservations, we have a block until October 17th if there's availability. So if we sell out tomorrow, they're not going to have a room for you on the 16th. So book sooner rather than later. I think that's about all we have.
And I would reiterate that, where people have in the past made the assumption that, you know, we've blocked off 400 rooms and there'll be plenty because I'll be the 399th person. with this property, with this event, and the fact that it's in Fort Worth, it doesn't work that way. We basically were able to block rooms out, but there's a whole date, and the hotel is anxious to find out exactly what is left. I know in speaking yesterday on our monthly phone call that they were the availability was becoming pinched. So that means hang up and go ahead and get your hotel reservations. if not, you're going to be tabbing it into the event because you have to be at a different hotel. All right.
Sounds good. Well, thanks for hopping on today.
No problem. Thank you as always. And Melissa, thank you. I know you were in the background kind of observing. Thanks to everybody that was on the call. And again, Anthony and Charlie, appreciate you guys putting your assets up here on the call so we can kind of run through them and everybody can learn together. And Anthony, I'll make sure as soon as we hang up that I'll go ahead and get to the office and we'll get this thing in the we'll get in the passing lane and pick up the speed on this for you, okay? All right, guys.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
See you later. Bye.
Bye-bye.